You are indeed tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and it's time for Brewocracy Now on your favorite community radio station, Brewocracy Now, where we, every week, we have a little talk with Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow, who every now and then will bring a guest on that is somehow connected to what is happening in this city. Today is no exception. Hi, John.
Hey, Tim, how are you?
I'm fine.
Happy Thursday.
Same to you. John, you know, there's been so much going on the kind of on the global level that it sucked the oxygen out of a lot of the thinking. But everything's still moving here in Port Townsend. We still have so many things to deal with to keep this city going as we are all used to it. And yeah. So I see that you've brought us a guest. That's
I have. I wish we could both be in the studio again like last week, Tim. That was a total pleasure. I'll be back again soon. But good. Meanwhile, I'm really just really honored to be here with Jim Novelli, who's the executive director of Discovery Behavioral Healthcare. And when I think around our community at, you know, pillars of contribution to our collective well-being and to, you know, the difficult issues and challenges we all face, Jim comes to top of mind. And so I just thought maybe we can start a little theme here. I think in the coming weeks, I'll have other health and housing provider leadership on this show. I wanted to start off with Jim and just introduce Jim. Welcome, Jim.
Oh, thank you very much. And happy St. Patty's Day to all my colleagues out there. Obviously, I'm not very Irish, but I am wearing green. So, but thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak. So,
yeah, I mean, Tim, I thought that with Jim, because, you know, they've been around, Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but for at least 25 years,
oh, yeah.
You've got a big team and you're dealing with issues related to the pandemic and a whole host of other things, you know, just an overview of what is Discovery Behavioral Healthcare and what do you do?
Okay, well, Discovery Behavioral Healthcare, its original roots started out as what we would call a community mental health center. In the 80s or prior to the 80s, when they deinstitutionalized people from mental health hospitals and moved into a community setting, the idea of these community mental health centers were to be able to provide those services. Unfortunately, for many of those years, the funding wasn't really appropriate. And so really people with mental health issues struggled to get all those services necessary that they were getting in the hospitals, even though it was better to be out of the hospitals, but we struggled along. Moving forward, I'm going to jump a lot of years. We're now really more called a behavioral health agency. All right. That's what we're licensed as, behavioral health agencies. But again, we're still a community mental health center that provides a wide array of services. We provide everything from individual therapy, group therapy, medication management, crisis services 24/7. We have crisis counselors available, case management services, youth services. We have the WISE team, which is a wraparound intensive services for youth, which really works for those youth that are really high risk and works with the families. It's a very important program because it's not just working with the one child, it's working with the family, and the family has to commit to getting that kind of help and wraparound. So we recently have expanded into Beacon of Hope was here for many years providing SUD services. Their owner retired, and I made his retirement maybe a little easier for him. And we worked on an agreement to absorb his previous agency. So now we're Discovery Behavioral Health, and we have what we call the Safe Harbor Treatment Program, which is our SUD component, our substance use disorder services. So what I've really done is more of an integration of trying to get everything under one roof. I hate to use the one-stop shopping, but really have all your needs met here. The only part we're missing right now is primary care under the roof, and maybe someday that'll happen. But right now, if you come to this agency, you need help, we obviously will find the right door for you. There's no wrong door when you come here, but we will find the right way to go. And that's really what the state's been trying to work at, is this integration model. And so we've really integrated these services. And and obviously we're here for the community. We have survived 2 years of COVID so far, going into the third year. I came on board only 2 years ago. I've only been here 2 years. So my first day on the job was February 18th of 2020. And 2 weeks later, we were smack dab in the middle of COVID. So none of us have written a book on how to work with COVID, how to deal with it. But I'm so proud of my staff. We stuck through it. We continued our services. We were remote. We were, you know, back in the building. We were remote again, but now we're back in the building and have been. And so we have a wide array of delivering services. We still can do some teleservices, which we provide for people that can't get access. So it's a whole new world. We have a new future ahead of us. And it's going to be interesting to see where it moves. And the need for our services have really increased exponentially. With COVID on top of that, you know, it's created more of anxieties and stress and those kind of related issues. So,
and it goes without saying that the services that you provide are so essential. I mean, we're used to seeing police and firemen. We're used to seeing these people on the streets and interacting with them. But your organization has been kind of working in the background for a long time and quite effectively from what I've heard. Mm-hmm. Do you, what you were speaking about the book for COVID hasn't been written there. It's been challenging for 2 years. The scale of behavioral health issues, even in a city the size of Port Townsend, is huge. How do you deal with it? Do you have the same problems getting professional people on your staff? How many staff do you have?
I'm a board member of the Washington Council for Behavioral Health, and many of my colleagues across the state have really struggled in COVID and lost a lot of employees, or been able not even to recruit people. Recruitment has been really hard, and retention. I have been blessed to actually been pretty stable. Through this point, my staff has really held on, and again, I honor them. But we take care of the public and the population, the individuals we serve, but I have to also really take care of my staff and make sure that they're in good shape, because they take, you know, even just in a normal world where you take on a lot of people's bad energy or troubles or issues, you take a lot home as a therapist. And, you know, I've been in this field for going on 27 plus years now. And so really staff care and well-being is very important. So we do our best here to make this capable here for people to have a good environment, a family-like environment. In fact, we served the staff today, a corned beef and cabbage dinner. It's little things like that that just really make appreciated and do the best we can. The community has been very responsive to our needs, and we have a good relationship with our other colleagues in the community, especially law enforcement. We have the Sheriff's Navigators housed under us that provides services. And we have a new program that the state rolled out that is housed with us. It's called the REAL program, which is a kind of pre-crisis program where our team goes out and does outreach on the streets. Looking for individuals that really have been the hardest to engage in services, or people that have not really been resistant and sometimes the services. But our REAL team really goes out there and tries to engage them as best as possible. And what that stands for is their acronym is really recovery, empowerment, advocacy, and linkage. And it's actually the state program is another navigator program, but I'm trying to get away from them. They're navigators. There's so many navigators going around. I joked that we're going to need a navigator to navigate the navigators. But the REAL team is new and it's growing, and we're learning as we go along, because this is new to us. It's based on a LEADS like program, but our people are out on the streets, going to the homeless camps. Helping law enforcement. The priority here is law enforcement response and diverting people from jail, diverting people from getting into the legal system. So in other words, if we can pass that and hand them off to us and get them engaged in services, maybe we can prevent somebody from having a jail term or something like that. So that's what we're building towards. But the community can also reach out to the REAL team. So it's out there. In fact, I noticed in yesterday's PT leader, Nat Attack, had put a little comic up there that mentioned the REAL team in there. We're trying to grow different services. There's a lot out there, and the money this year, the financing budget wise, this was a good budget year for behavioral health, believe it or not, for once. We have the legislature approved a 7% increase in our Medicaid rates, which sounds like a lot, but not effective to January of 2023. And inflation already is chipping away at that. So, and that's always been our struggle in community mental health or behavioral health, is really our pay scale is much different than private providers or, those kind of levels of service. So we have most of our people very dedicated here. And our people that come here fresh out of school, a lot of them, get a lot of training here, get licensed. And once they get licensed, sometimes they head out to bigger and greener pastures. But, but that's the way it operates. So,
Jim, one of the things that I feel like part of this, the ethos of this show that Tim and I do, is helping to paint the picture that the connections, especially in a smaller community, even if they're unseen, are deeply important. Mm-hmm. And quite numerous. And so, whether you're talking about the state budget or, how to afford mm-hmm. to pay for a team, I translate that into investment in this local community mm-hmm. and actually something that touches all of us. And not just because all of us, I could probably almost say everybody in our community has in some way or another been affected by increased stress or anxiety because of the pandemic, mm-hmm. at the very least. From all aspects of how we've done society in the last couple of years, an investment in our collective well-being and health not only helps us achieve more as a community, but there's I hate to be trite about cost savings, but when you talk about diverting people from the criminal justice system, that's a benefit that we all share, not just keeping people cycling around and relatively expensive, non-preventative measures. I wanted to talk a little bit about why should someone who has no concern about mental health issues in family or themselves, who why does this matter to the average person who's not in crisis or doesn't know somebody in crisis, although I bet that's pretty unusual.
Well, I mean, statistics will show us that 1 in 5 people have sometime been diagnosed in their lifetime with some type of mental illness. And it could not be severe, but it might be just depression, something, a minor depression, and many families are touched by mental health issues. And it cuts across all socioeconomic, all race, all ethnicities. So I think that more people are starting to really reduce that stigma around mental health. Mm-hmm. When I used to teach at the community college, I used to always give this example that two moms and neighbors would talk about their sons or daughters going to the hospital for appendicitis or a broken arm or something like that, but they would never talk about their sons and daughters mm-hmm. having to go maybe to the hospital for mental health care, mm-hmm. Because of the stigma attached to it. And I think we're starting to see a much more awakening in this culture, mm-hmm. in our culture, in our country, even in the government levels, of the importance of mental health, because it's important to the functioning of our economy, to our everyday lives. And when you mentioned about how it touches people, I mean, when you have a retail operation and if you have people that are key players and they have a mental illness, that they got to keep operating, yeah. Through this whole process. And so it may not really, people say, well, that doesn't bother me, doesn't interest me, but you're touched by it somewhere along the line. Something's happening out on the streets or something takes place. And just to be an awareness. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess, I maybe we can all share knowing somebody who's deeply close to us or in our family who struggles with mental health issues. I certainly know many people in my family and in circle of friends who struggle from time to time or pretty chronically. It does have a deeply personal touch here, but I think obviously the point to try to ram home here is that, it matters for all of us in a lot of ways, even if you feel a little outside of the direct impact. And in fact, it might matter more than we think, because while the stigma is being removed, and I'm a huge fan of, discussing this very openly and confidently and appropriately in a public forum, because we need to bring attention to our needs as a community. There still are those who don't feel that comfortable. I think even on this show, people have given me some criticism for speaking openly about mental health issues in a way that they did not like. And my response is, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but if we fail to have a conversation about this publicly, we'll fail to take appropriate action and recognize the significance and the wide impacts of mm-hmm. mental health crisis on our community.
Right. And, you know, even people with severe mental illness are still productive people in the community, or can be productive. And our goal is not to maintain anymore. It's to be, the model has changed. It's more recovery oriented, to get people to recover to the best level of capabilities and get them engaged in work, getting engaged in living on their own to be as self-sufficient as possible. Yeah. And, you know, we're not here to sweep it under the rug anymore and say that, you know, mental health people are over here to the, you know, we don't leave that group alone. And I want it to be a much more open discussion and realization that I guess there's this part of, in our society that every time there's a crime, you know, they always associate it with mental health or mental illness. And I find that almost, when you really look at the statistics per capita, the number of people with mental illness that commit crimes is a lot lower than the normal population and the regular population, I guess is the way to put it. But, you know, it's just, I always used to make a quirk in when I taught, I used to say, you know, when somebody murders somebody or when there's a crime that occurs, they never say that, well, that person committed a crime, suffers from diabetes or suffers from cancer, but it's always about, oh, has a mental illness. I mean, how do you equate those things? I mean, mental illness should be on the same pier, it's the same level as any kind of medical disorder. It's a medical disorder and it can be treated and it can be worked with if you get into treatment.
Well, one of the things I've found that the city's been quite proud of is the implementation of the Navigator program and in the city and eventually in the county also. And did you say that Navigator staff is one of your staff?
Yes. The one in the sheriff department is a gentleman that used to work for us and still works for us. He's actually in there. And we work with the sheriff's department, and Stephen has done a great job. And he's changed the whole role of how Navigator works. It's more of a case management approach that he goes out there and he does, you know, even though the initial contact occurs, he follows up the next day or the days after. It's just like one and done kind of deal anymore. I mean, so he really brings that whole case management around and really literally can drive him up to our door and get him in the front door and try to get him hooked up to service. And, you know, so that's the whole kind of integration of all these services that's important.
And I really like the integration between city and county here too. I mean, you know, a big shout out to Judd Haynes, who's the city's navigator on contract with us. And, you know, the fact that we could work in tandem with our agency, you know, sister agency in the county and in the sheriff's office is really a great benefit to all of us because there's such shared, you know, not just shared jurisdiction to some degree, but also shared challenges. And, you know, some of these are not related to a specific geography. They're a community issue. I'd also want to make sure, I mean, Jim, is it appropriate? There's you also have a crisis line, you know, and.
Yes. Well, it's the VOA line, Volunteers of America, which yes, that crisis line is anybody can call that. And I can shout out the number if you want. It's 1-888-910-0416.
Yeah.
There's a crisis, and that's the Universal Crisis Line 24/7. You can call that number and they will, you know, triage and make sure you get to the right place. So
yeah, I just want to make sure anybody listening now or into the future understands that no matter what time of the day, there is somebody who is on the other end of a phone line willing and wanting to help.
Absolutely.
And that touches on a question that I have is I kind of assumed that many of your clients come to you via police contact. Is that true or not true?
Not really. You know, it's I would say probably in the substance use world, that's more the track. It's usually due to engagement because of law enforcement or they got into some kind of legal issue. Where in the mental health side, there's some that come in that way, but many come in for, you know, just obviously been struggling at home or through crisis or those kinds of things, but not necessarily through the law enforcement. But the SUD services are more traditional that way. It's hard for people to really open their eyes and say, I have a drinking problem, I wanna go get help. That's a very hard thing to, you know, for somebody to do. Whereas somebody that has a mental health issue, they have a little more support sometimes and they get through us through crisis usually, or some other kind of avenue, so.
Tim, I'm noting that we have a guest here, also just a participant, and want to make sure, Julia, it's good to see you again. I'm wondering if you want to unmute yourself, you could ask any one of us a question and jump into the conversation.
Thank you. I have a question for Jim.
Uh-huh.
So there's two cases that I'm involved in right now. One person I know needs chore service to keep his apartment. He is a DBH client. He is regularly in and out of institutions. He cycles that way. And I'm just having a really hard time getting him chore service. We pay for a cleaner, but it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he needs somebody who's there more regular. Okay. And the second person is somebody who's currently sleeping beside City Hall,
mm-hmm.
who is has addiction and mental health issues. I know your agency has been contacted by her. The real team has been contacted about her. We're trying to get her some type of shelter because this is not the greatest weather to be sleeping in a space next to City Hall. So those are my two questions.
So let me start with the last one, kind of work backwards a little bit. People with mental illness are allowed to be mentally ill, okay, by law, by they have legal right. And they can refuse service as long as they're not a danger to self, others, or they're so incapacitated that they are at risk of harm to themselves.
They want shelter.
You know, and so, you know, so we engage people as best we can. I mean, shelter obviously is a big problem here in this county. We know there's not a lot of housing available. So, you know, when we try to find housing, I mean, that's one of our goal, our case managers with our clients in particular, we try to keep them, maintain them in housing as best as possible. But, you know, we are limited in the types of services we do. We don't provide housekeeping services. We don't provide, you know, washing people's dishes. We'd have to find somebody that could do that for them. I mean, you know, if there's a service out there that would do that, but that's not really in our basket of work. But, you know, when people are out there and, you know, I've done this for a very long time and people act differently or act bizarre, whatever terms you want to use, they have every right to do that as long as they're not affecting somebody else dangerously or affecting themselves dangerously, or they're, you know, severely incapacitated or gravely disabled is the term, where they can't take. But it's amazing how many people really make a conscious choice to be a certain way sometimes, and we try to engage them, we try to slowly coax them into a direction that might be for us seem safer, but a lot of times people feel very comfortable with the situation they're in, and it's very hard to convince them sometimes. And as you mentioned, you know, unfortunately mental illness and medications can work to a certain extent, and medications sometimes lose their efficacy. And what happens is that, you know, they end up that cycle of going back into the hospital for adjustment, medication adjustment or something like that. But, you know, it's not perfect, to say the least. So, you know, sometimes it struggles to really get people engaged and get them to accept services. And it's all we can do is engage and try. You know, we can't force people into service unless they meet certain criteria.
So doesn't case management help people access stuff like tour services?
They can help people if they wish to have it, but sometimes people refuse to have that.
No, my client, these clients are totally willing. We're looking to find services for them.
Julia, I might suggest that you both can possibly continue this. I'm just noticing who wants to get a word in because we're about 1 minute to go on the broadcast.
Thank you for that, John. And unfortunately, this is such a huge issue, and it's so interesting to me to see the people that are out there working in the trenches on this. I wish we had more time. We have about 1 minute, but I think this definitely deserves a longer discussion. I'm really interested in the crossover between mental health and substance abuse, especially given the fact that this community has lost some very well-loved citizens lately to that scourge. And I would be very interested to understand how we can work towards some type of solution on that. And Julia, it's been great to have you also, because I know you've been out there dealing with this for a long time. But John, maybe, you know, John, being the Port Townsend city manager, comes with a lot of perks. He's able to get us some fascinating guests, and hopefully we can do this again.
Yeah. And I think, Tim, like you say, I mean, first off, just thanks to Julia for being here and Jim for being a special guest. You know, next week, I think we can also explore the intersection with housing. We'll have Cherish Cronmiller, the executive director of OLECAP, here next week at this time. And my guess is that we'll continue some degree of this same conversation. So look forward to that.
I do too. And I want to thank you so much, John Morrow, Julia Cochran, Jim Novelli, who's Irish. I'm sure he's Irish.
I think my ancestors, yeah, my ancestors are rolling over there.
I am definitely Irish.
There you go. Julia Corcoran, you are Irish. Yeah. But thank you so much. And we'll continue this in the future. Thank you for putting this together.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody. Right. Thanks, Tim.
Okay, thank you.
See you.